Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com. Look Ahead Radio joining us this afternoon. As we can well imagine, we're going to be hearing what's been going on there in the European community. I'm curious about worldwide events, but I'm also very interested in how things are perceived there in the world at large. So with that, as we introduce Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, this portion, by the way, has been pre-recorded to accommodate Tom's sleeping schedule in light of the fact that it's going on towards midnight there in London, where we find Tom. And with that, Tom, good afternoon. Actually, good evening to you as we prepare this program. And as we said a moment ago about London, what's the weather like in your fair town?
Well, at the moment, the sun is shining. It's a bit chilly. It was certainly chilly when I was out cycling along the river this morning. But the sun is shining. It has been a very wet winter, though. It has been very wet, windy, and cold.
Well, wintertime there. By the way, the river. I'm assuming that we're talking the Thames?
That's the only river that runs through London that I know of.
Oh, okay.
Right through the middle.
All right. And so you were riding along. You know, the Thames, I know that the Thames has been moved many times by both natural and human endeavors, straightening out and adjusting, and some instances actually narrowing the Thames. What's it like now? Is the Thames fairly clean as it...
It's getting a lot cleaner. My bike ride, which I take, takes me right down to the House of Commons, down to Parliament. I cycle past Parliament and then, you know, around Battersea Park. It's a very nice cycle ride. They have a path which goes all along the Thames for a couple of hundred miles.
And, this is basically a walking park, or a park that's basically to promote the Thames and access
it? You can walk and you can cycle. From one end of the Thames, well, basically all the way from Oxford to the North Sea.
Wow. From Oxford to, very impressive. We're going to have to talk about this for folks who might be interested in going to England for the purpose of tourism and vacationing and the sort of thing that you could probably do. I look forward to talking with you at greater length as we get into more topics associated with travel. Tom Arms, of course, joining us this afternoon. And by the way, Tom did allude to, and we won't get into the details, but you're going to be cycling to Paris. Is that correct?
Well, the plan is, I haven't quite registered yet.
Okay.
But I've had a few health problems, and this is a chance to really, get fit again.
Mm-hmm.
And in September, I'm planning a cycle ride. It will be about 300 odd miles from London to Paris to raise money for a cancer fund called Myeloma UK. And it should be great fun. It'd be about 60, 70 miles a day. And it'd be a challenge.
All right, I've got to make note of this. You're using the term miles, of course.
Yes.
When you
I'm using it because that's what you use. Here, I think they're talking about 110 kilometers a day.
Okay, I was just curious. Does the UK, because of course the UK has been resistant, as is the US, to the metric system, how much of the metric system is currently in use there in the UK?
Oh, it depends on who you're talking to.
Okay. Well, it's just one of those. It was one of those little quirks. The efforts. This goes back, my goodness, the 80s, 70s, when there was an effort to convert the entire world to the metric system. And of course, in many regards, how the U.S. economy is built literally on the metric system. But in the case of our feet, inches, miles,
you've got a decimal currency system and a non-decimal measuring system.
I know. Well, we still like fractions here. As a matter of fact, we're kind of a fracturous state. Anyhow, all right, joining us this afternoon. You caught you on that one. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Well, let's talk about fractious issues. One, of course, being, and I'm wondering, is it getting a lot of international attention, the events in Washington, D.C. related to impeachment?
Oh, absolutely. It's getting front page almost every day. It got knocked off the front page today by the Middle East peace plan and Huawei. It's certainly being covered live on television by the BBC and Euronews, and also we get CNN here as well. So it's getting an awful lot of coverage. The latest, of course, is that we're getting reports that Mitch McConnell doesn't think he has enough support to prevent witnesses being called. You know, Ambassador Bolton's forthcoming book is getting a lot of coverage. So the answer to your question is yes.
Now, question, it's getting front page. Is that kicking a lot of the international news off the front page of the press?
Well,
there?
It is international news for us.
Okay. I'd acknowledge that, but it just consuming so much of it, the rather tiresome and very, very elongated process that it is, I'm just intrigued that it continues to get a lot of coverage. I've got to do a comparative analysis here very quickly with you, Tom. Let's look at that relationship, too, and we'll get to this a little later on as well as about events there in Britain. The decision by the Sussexes, Harry and Meghan, to leave the UK and head to Canada. By the way, what is the story on that, or the rumor? Are they in fact going to make permanent location in Canada?
Well, that appears to be the case. That has not gotten as much news this week. I think it's been replaced by the other royal story, which is, of course, Prince Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as royalty is concerned, and also the impeachment, the impeachment trial is getting a lot more coverage than Meghan and Prince Harry.
Okay, and I find that interesting because I know that has a deep resonance, particularly in the UK, for the general populace, being a country that recognizes and appreciates the royalty. Let's go back to the topic of the impeachment for a moment, and I'm curious. In the international press, of course, in the UK, but I'm talking France, Germany, Spain, Ireland, wherever elsewhere in the in European community, how much coverage is being given to the impeachment proceedings here in the United States?
The same as in the UK. It's wall to wall. You know, I mean, you have to remember, I can't stress this enough, that you know, the relationship that America has with the rest of the world, the fact that it controls such a lot, it is the world's largest economy. It has such a large nuclear arsenal. It has so many troops around the world. It is the world's only superpower. So what it does and whether or not the president is impeached has an impact, a huge impact on the rest of the world. And so they're interested.
I have to credit you with your observation. The questions are always asked, why do we always want to talk to you? But I think what you've just shared with us is something that quite often we take for granted, and that is the significant influence, both militarily, economically, and of course now politically, that we have on the world at large. With that said, Tom, what is the opinion as far as the setting the president aside? What is the opinion about the impact on the United States image? What damage has been done or assistance has been done to our image there in the European community?
Well, that's difficult to say because we haven't reached a conclusion yet. But certainly there is the feeling that the country has become too partisan.
Okay.
And that the politicians have given up trying to find a consensus and compromise, which is essential for good governance.
Well, now I have to say thank you very much, because that's been one of my complaints about the whole issue, that it's been so focused on, if you will, partisanship and an effort, quite frankly, to remove the president without the privilege of a vote.
I don't think they see that as one political party. They don't see that as only the Democrats being partisan. They see both parties as being partisan.
Okay. I'll acknowledge that. I think there is a high degree of partisanship, and the failure on the part of both chambers, and I would say, as say chambers, both parties, to at least acknowledge that there needs to be something done that is a cooperative nature. And to your point, I think that's an important issue. We'll get to that in a moment, because I'm curious about the partisanship even in the UK, France, Germany, primary countries there in the European community. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World. Our guest this afternoon, of course, our foreign editor, correct that last, our foreign editor, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, with us here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, joining us from London, England. And yes, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule, since it's going on towards midnight where he is there in London. Tom, we were chatting a moment ago about the issue of partisanship in the United States, and I'm wondering, is that not unique, or is that unique in the European community? I mean, we've seen partisanship, and let's pick on the UK for a moment, related to the Labour Party versus the Conservatives.
Yes.
And so I'm wondering, is this a new awareness there in the European community? Is this something that's relatively unique?
It is more pronounced in the US and the UK, because in those two countries you have very entrenched two-party systems, which forces the electorate to make a choice between one of two choices. Whereas elsewhere in the West, you have a more multi-party system because of the electoral process. You have a system of proportional representation in the elections, so that parties are chosen by the proportion, or their representation
right.
in Parliament is chosen by the proportion of the vote that they receive in elections.
Okay, so
that means that forces the governments into coalition
and compromise. Yeah.
And compromise and consensus. Exactly.
All right. I was curious about that. I want to go back to one other item. You mentioned there's an interest in John Bolton's book. And I'm wondering, what is the perception of former Secretary Bolton, in the sense that he was perceived as somewhat of a militant and militarist there originally when he was working for the administration? What is the opinion now of John Bolton?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's funny. You know, it's a bit like the enemy of my enemy is my enemy, the friend of my
okay.
enemy is my friend,
right.
sort of thing. And certainly in the past, he was seen very, very much as a militant. And in a way, because he was such a militant and has turned against Trump for on the grounds that perhaps Trump is even more militant and more irrational than Bolton was envisaged to be, he is seen as perhaps having more credibility.
Okay. I find that – I'm laughing about that. That's interesting. All right. Well, let's talk about – since we're talking about John Bolton, the Ukrainian investigation, U.S. surveillance of Yovanovitch. Thank you very much. At the former ambassador. And my question is, what's the story there?
Well, that's gotten a lot of coverage, too. And a bit of tongue-in-cheek type coverage that finally the Ukrainians have launched an investigation.
So,
and what they've launched it in is exactly what Trump doesn't want them to launch and investigate, and which is the surveillance of the former American ambassador to the Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch. And, you know, the Ukrainian government has said that it, you know, that the surveillance of Yovanovitch was a possible violation of the law of the Ukraine and the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations. So, you know, it seems like at the moment he's getting it from every which angle, doesn't it?
Well, you know, of course, my response is, she was an employee of the United States, so in fact she should be observed at any time. Okay, the other question, of course, goes to the Ukraine.
But it's against the law.
Well, no, it's...
The thing is, you know, the law is the law.
Now, all right.
And you can't You can't just rewrite the law for political reasons.
Okay.
This is a discussion we have all the time.
Well, no, wait a second.
You know, which takes precedence, political expediency over law?
Right.
I argue the law.
All right. The law, of course, associated with ambassadors, and I would argue associated with the issue of what takes place on sovereign land, which, of course, is the topic of embassies.
I agree. But I think she was being, her mobile phone was being followed, and also where she went outside the embassy, things like that.
I think that the U.S. has all privileges to do that. But that's another topic, since she is an employee of the U.S.
It's open to discussion.
Okay. Another topic associated with that is the Ukraine. What is the future of the Ukrainian relationship with Europe? In light of the fact that they still have some major conflict with Russia, which I want to touch on briefly as well.
Well, it's a difficult one. And Ukraine has to tread a very, very, very difficult line, a tightrope.
Uh-huh.
Because, and this is a problem they had with Petroshenko and so forth. Every time. Because Ukraine has a very long history with Russia.
Mm-hmm.
It has, and there are a lot of people who want to be close to Russia, especially those in eastern Ukraine,
mm-hmm.
where a lot of them speak Russian. And a lot of people in the western half of the country want to be close to Europe.
Right.
And the Russians don't want Ukraine to fall into the western stroke EU European camp. And they regard that as basically an act of aggression, if it does. And so, at the same time, however, the Ukrainians in the West want to be protected against Russian aggression, and so they can't really go fully into the EU, but they can't at the same time go fully into Russia, so they have to try and tread a tightrope between the two.
So,
does that make sense?
It does. It does. And, of course, this has been a issue of great concern associated with the future of our relations with Ukraine. All right. Let's look at other items here before we go to the break. And I've got joining us this afternoon, of course, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. The topic goes to Russia very quickly. Obviously, Vladimir Putin has established new regulations and requirements, which gives him even greater influence in Russia. Is there any concern about that in the European community?
Well, I mean, what he's doing is trying to set himself up as de facto president for life.
Right.
Now, he hasn't been specific yet in how he's going to do this. He wants to rewrite the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And what he's hinting at is that the Constitution should be rewritten so the president becomes more ceremonial, and he would step down as he has to, as the Constitution requires, but he would beef up something called the State Council, and he would continue to head up the State Council. And the State Council would probably become the major political power in Russia.
You know, one has to wonder, are we looking to China as leadership, as sort of guidelines for Vladimir Putin's control?
I was thinking something similar, actually. You know, that, in fact, I think probably a better parallel would be with the old Soviet Union.
Okay.
Whereas there was a parliament in the old Soviet Union, there was a president mm-hmm. who was ceremonial, but the party controlled the government,
right.
And there was a central committee, and the central committee basically was the equivalent of a legislature, and there was a Politburo, which was the equivalent of the cabinet,
right.
But in order to belong to either one, you had to be a prominent member of the Communist Party.
Okay, I just was wondering if we're seeing pretty much thinking the same thing, and we are. I wrap it up here with, because I want to move on to a group of other items. We got to get to the Middle East plan. You mentioned that a moment ago. The question goes to the relations with Russia, particularly by Germany, which, of course, relies on Russian natural gas. What's the feeling there?
They need the gas to import the gas, as the United States would like, from America.
Mm-hmm.
Would be outrageously expensive because it would have to come in by ship across the ocean as liquefied natural gas. It's a lot cheaper for it to be piped in by pipeline. from Russia. And at the same time, they want to have good relations with Russia. They want to include Russia, but at the same time, they are concerned about Russian aggression.
Okay.
So they want to keep talking to Russia. They want to have a sort of detente, if we go and back to the 70s and use a term from that era. But at the same time, they are wary of them.
All right. I would argue quickly, and just a quick editorial comment. I think that Russia recognizes this and is utilizing this sense of fear and to the extent that Russia is a bully, and we've seen this firsthand there in Ukraine.
I would also point out that the Germans and in fact a lot of Europe are not as comfortable with the Trump administration and the United States at the moment and the continued security that the United States offers. Because of the various threats that have come out of the White House over the years since Trump was elected.
Okay, we'll accept it.
And so they have to hedge their bets.
All right, you're listening to Viewpoints Around the World. Sometimes we don't like what we're hearing, but I think it's important. Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here this afternoon. And again, this portion has been pre-recorded.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio, joining us from London, England, where it is some 5 hours ahead. So this portion of the program has been pre-recorded. Tom, let's talk about a variety of issues. You mentioned earlier Prince Andrew and the concerns associated with the Department of Justice here in the United States that want to talk to him about his relationship with Mr. Epstein. And I'm wondering, how is that being played there in the UK?
Another huge story. The headline today was a comment from Prince Andrew saying, "I don't know what the FBI is talking about. I'm quite happy to talk to them." Hmm. We don't know exactly where the story is at the moment. Whether or not Prince Andrew will cooperate with the FBI or not. 2 days ago, the word was that Prince Andrew's lawyers said, no, you should not talk to the FBI. Today, the story is Prince Andrew saying, yeah, I'll talk to them.
Mm. All right. How much of a damage is this all having between, I mentioned earlier, the Sussexes, that's Meghan and Harry, and now Prince Andrew? What damage is this doing to...
It's having a huge amount of damage.
Okay.
People are basically saying, well, they're not. I would say there's still a huge majority in support of the monarchy, but it's certainly strengthening what's called the Republican cause here in the UK. Against that is the fact that the Queen is very much loved, she's very much respected, and very much appreciated. And gradually, the same trust is being extended to her son Charles, and her grandson William and his wife Kate are very, very popular indeed. So you've got, in the line of succession, three generations, which are quite popular. But the tangential members of the royal family are doing a lot of damage.
Okay. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio chatting with us from London, England. Real quickly, how much importance is this in the European press? Do they care? Well, I would think they would.
Oh, they do.
Okay.
The French in particular love the British royal family. You get more reported in the French press than you do in the British press sometimes.
Wow. All right.
They chopped off their king's head.
Right.
and all the aristocracy, and then they adopted the British royal family.
Good for the French. Let's move on to items. You mentioned also the Middle East peace plan. How is that being received?
Well, it's being received as a complete washout.
Really?
I'm just looking for the Times editorial on it, which, of course, is in my cuttings here. And right at the bottom of the pile where it shouldn't be. At any rate, they're very scathing about it.
Oh, really?
They say that how basically all the press, Die Welt, Le Monde, The Times, they're all saying you can't have an agreement with just one half of the party. You can't have an agreement when it's just someone imposing an agreement on another party. That's not an agreement. That's an imposition. And it's going to fail. A number of people have said that the purpose of this agreement is simply to appeal to President Trump's base, which is strongly pro-Israel. It's an electioneering stunt. And also to try and keep Netanyahu in power in Israel. And they expect Netanyahu this week to actually annex the bits that have been talked about in this latest peace plan, and that it won't succeed.
Okay. We won't belabor this today, but I think it's something to watch very closely. All right, that's the Middle East peace plan. I haven't seen a great deal of reaction from Syria and other Middle Eastern countries on this, or I'm not paying close attention to it.
The Jordanians are the only ones who've really made a strong statement about it that I've seen, and they've condemned it.
Okay. I find that interesting. But what about Russia and Syria and Turkey? No comments.
No comments yet.
All right. One has to wonder why.
Not that I've seen.
All right, let's move to another region of the world. Let's go to China and talk about the issue of the coronavirus. I've actually had phone calls on this topic as well, Tom, wondering what impact this is going to have on the economy, the economies of the world. What is the and of course, you've got the Silk Road, I think, is described as the new effort on part of China to improve trade with Europe and the United Kingdom. What impact is all of this having at this time?
Well, it is having a huge impact. Basically, all of Wuhan has been closed down. In fact, almost all of the province that Wuhan is in, which is Hubei province, has been closed down. They have suspended the Lunar New Year or the New Year celebrations in most of China. And I should add, New Year celebrations, it's a bit like canceling Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's the equivalent in China. Several airlines, including British Airways, Indonesian Airlines, I think Japanese Airlines, Kazakhstan Airlines, have stopped all flights to China. This mm-hmm. has an impact economically. It means that there's no trade out of a very important trading hub. In fact, there's no, trade with China is dropping. When they had the SARS scare, which
right.
is one of the best ways of trying to judge how much impact it might have on the world economy, they estimated it cost the world economy $100 billion.
Do they see this as being the same, being equivalent to the SARS or greater than?
Yes, at least as equivalent as the SARS epidemic.
Okay.
And it's early days yet to say. They estimate, I think it's about 1,200 or something. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps changing hourly almost. Confirmed cases.
Right.
But well over 100,000 suspected cases.
Mm-hmm. Now,
because obviously, you can't tell straight away whether someone has it.
Have you had any notices of cases in Europe?
Yes, in France.
Okay.
Here in the UK, they're sending in chartered flights into Wuhan, and they're evacuating British subjects or British citizens and bringing them back to the UK. I think there's about 6,000 or something in Wuhan, a huge number. But mm-hmm. it's in Hubei province. There are a lot of people. Wuhan is the size of London. And everyone coming back to the UK is being put in quarantine for 14 days before they're allowed out and about. We've had about a dozen people who have been put in quarantine so far, but they've all been cleared.
The other aspect of this and goes to the political impact of this, how China's reacting. And of course, I know that the World Health Organization is meeting as we speak to talk about the possibility of declaring an international emergency. What impact does this have on the political environment for China?
China politically, at least in international terms, is coming out of this fairly well. They were criticized during the SARS epidemic for not providing the World Health Organization with enough information to combat the SARS epidemic, and it was thought they didn't react quickly enough to the threat. In this case, they have reacted very quickly. They've been very cooperative, not only with the World Health Organization, but with international or national bodies around the world. They are working very hard on trying to find a vaccine. They have isolated the virus in Australia, I think, and they think they can have a vaccine, but it will probably take a year.
Okay, I want to talk about this, and we'll move to other items here, and I want to talk about, you've got a note here, banning reporters from the UK and America. But the question goes to the economics, and I would address this in the sense that China realizes now they're very connected to the world economically, and any impact of this on trade will have a very negative impact for many years to come on the economics of China. I think that's part of the issue, part of the calculus.
Tom, well, it will also have an impact on elsewhere in the world because, people are locked in their houses, they're not going to the factories, they're not producing goods, but there are people elsewhere in the world who've ordered those goods, and those goods are not going into shops.
Okay, I agree with you, and I find this, of course, being a problem for tourism as well, both to China and from China into Europe. Very quickly, how important is the Chinese tourism industry to the European community?
We have an awful lot of Chinese tourists coming here to Europe, generally at the top end. They are the wealthier people. They shop at Chanel and Harrods like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they spend a lot of money.
Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us. We'll get a few moments before we go to the break. Tom, let's talk about the banning of reporters. What's going there?
Yeah. Well, I was particularly interested when I read about the NPR radio journalist being banned by Pompeo from the latest flight. Because here in the UK, we've had a similar situation where the 10 Downing Street... Has banned cabinet ministers from appearing on the flagship radio BBC program called the Today program because they don't like the way that their interviewers ask questions. And I find that a bit disturbing. Also, the outgoing director general of the BBC has said that he is a bit disturbed that there's too much of a Rottweiler approach to interviewing in the BBC when they're talking to politicians.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And I find that a bit disturbing myself. You probably disagree, or you may disagree, or your listeners may, simply because I think that is one of the purposes of the press, is to give politicians a hard time.
Absolutely. We agree with you on that one. And so I appreciate that. Tom, I'm going to move to another item. And we talked about China here a few moments ago. Your topic, and this kind of relates to it, Huawei splitting with the splits U.S. and U.K. How so?
Well, what it is Huawei has developed 5G technology, which is the latest generation of telecoms technology. And the British, the Americans are saying, well, we don't want to use this because it could be a Trojan horse into our electronic spy equipment.
Right.
And of course, the British and the American electronic intelligence operations are linked at the hip. And so the British are saying, well, we need this because it is the best. It is the best. And it is what we can afford. And that combination means we need it. And we think that we can put enough restrictions on its use that it won't become a threat to our intelligence operations. And so they've decided, as of yesterday, despite American objections, that they're going to take it. And this is going to be a bit of a problem in U.S.-American relations. Now, I think the other thing that's going to come out of this, and this is what the British are saying, Why are we having to take 5G? Because we didn't do it ourselves. We didn't get off our backsides, pull our fingers out, and actually do the AI research that was required to beat the Chinese on this. And we've got to remember that in the future. So when we come to 6G, we've got to take the lead.
Okay, so now, you're seeing this as a sort of a wake-up call for technology and technological development. All right, I've got to go to a break here. Our guest this afternoon, of course, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and LookAhead Radio. Several items to wrap up. I did not ask him, and I'm curious here in just a moment to find out, was there a lot of coverage about the recent death of Kobe Bryant? You're listening to Viewpoints.
It was.
All right, we'll talk about that in just a moment here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints on the talk station, FM 107 AM 1240. That's Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms. Tom, I did ask very quickly, briefly, was there a lot of coverage on the recent death of Kobe Bryant?
There was. Almost as much coverage as on the impeachment, actually. And it was right across the world. You've got to, people may or may not realize it in the States, but basketball is becoming the second most popular sport in the world.
That, I think that's an important observation on your part, and thank you very much for making that. All right, let's move to two other items. I've got a little note here. The 75th anniversary of the liberation of
Auschwitz.
Auschwitz. Oh, okay. I didn't see. Yes, that was a significant story. How is that being played in the European community?
Well, it's huge. Everyone was there. But I wanted to bring attention to it because of what was said in the German parliament and not so much in German parliament, but by the German politicians, uh-huh. because obviously it was the Germans who were responsible for Auschwitz. And they are really concerned. There was an article in Der Spiegel by the German foreign minister, Heiko Maas, who warned that Jews could leave Germany in a massive scale if urgent action was not taken to stop the rising tide of anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
And that was an article that appeared in conjunction with the 75th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz.
Okay.
They are really concerned. Attacks in Germany against Jews are up 10%.
Okay.
And that's the same right across Europe.
That's disconcerting and I would say very concerning. And of course, that's an issue that resonates here in the States as well. Very quick question for you, Tom, because I want to move on to another issue. The denouement of the day, the unwinding, the national, what is this? Draw cab, sky cab day? Is that
No, you're supposed to try and figure that out, Lockwood.
Oh, okay. Well, before we do that, I want to ask a quick question back to the 75th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. And of course, the fact that the Russians are the ones that liberated the camp. But two, the impact on Poland. Poland, I would argue, has not been given good press on either its efforts to fight Nazi Germany, and I do intentionally mention Nazi Germany, not just Germany, Nazi Germany, and the Russians. And I'm wondering, have the Poles been given credit with their efforts in World War II?
I think they have here in the UK.
Okay, I just wondered.
A lot of Polish, especially pilots, managed to escape
right.
from Poland
and they
after the German and Russian invasion and played a major part in the Royal Air Force.
Okay, I just wanted, I want to belabor this, but I was just curious because it's a story that I think has missed much of the national and particularly historic reference as well. Tom, I want to move on to, and this, I'm curious, what is national, you've sent this cryptic note. What is this day we're talking about?
I thought I'd send that to you. National Day, which National Backwards Day, spelled backwards, of course.
Oh,
On the 31st of January.
Okay. Where is this held? Where is this? Where is National?
You're supposed to do on the 31st of January, you're supposed to do everything backwards. So you walk backwards. You have your dessert before your main course. You get up backwards. You go to, you get up. You go to bed in the morning and you go.
Well, I always back into the bed, so I'll drive in the future on January 31. So January 31 is, and this is a national backwards day.
This is a national backwards day.
In what countries, by the way?
Just in your country. Oh, just in America.
Just in America. Oh.
Just in America. You've got this one all to yourself.
Okay. We will air viewpoints around the world backwards on that day, and I'm sure that, well, of course, we've always said that if you rewind some of the Beatles' music backwards, you get a, you know,
and slow it down to 78 or speed it up.
You get all these messages, these secret messages. I like the idea. Yeah. National Backwards Day.
Lockwood scratches his left ear.
Yes. Tom, as always, thank you for being with us this morning.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.